Today on Maine Calling, analysis of Maine primary results so far. Final election results are still trickling in, but it appears that three major races will go to ranked choice runoffs, both the Democratic and Republican Party races for governor and the Democratic primary race in the 2nd Congressional District. Meanwhile, Graham Plattner has secured the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate and will face U.S. Senator Susan Collins in November. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we break down the primary results with three Maine political reporters. Given the ranked choice system, how long until we know the winner of every race? How did Maine's open primary affect election results? Did unenrolled voters come out in force? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine voters had their say yesterday in the primary races for governor, U.S. Senate, Maine's two seats in the House of Representatives, and the state legislature. Today, we will discuss the results of the voting, as well as where things stand and what to expect as far as the tallying of those ranked choice voting results. Joining us for the hour are Susan Cover, who is State House reporter and multimedia content producer with Spectrum News, Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House correspondent, and Steve Missler, chief political correspondent with Maine Public. We invite you to join the conversation. What are your questions after looking at yesterday's results or even voting either early or yesterday? What issues are important to you? Do the results change your enthusiasm for the November election? Send us an email, a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us, especially after I know all of you had a very long night last night. And all of this is not over by any long shot. Steve, I'll start with you. What do we know about voter turnout and who voted?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jen. I mean, they're still counting votes, so we don't really have a good sense of, you know, what the overall turnout is, but you can already see just in the numbers that we have so far that there was a big turnout edge for Democrats yesterday, which I think is illustrative, perhaps, the party's enthusiasm for the November election and possibly candidates that were on the ballot yesterday. So in the Republican primary, as things stand right now, with, you know, the votes that we've seen counted according to the latest results, there were a little more than 97,000 votes cast in the Republican gubernatorial primary, whereas in the Democratic gubernatorial primary there were 162,000, slightly more than that. So that's a big gap, and we've seen that even in early vote totals, like the early absentee balloting over the last couple of weeks, which is something that I've been tracking, and just seeing a big edge in turnout among Democrats versus Republicans. So I mean, I think that bodes well for Democrats in November if they can maintain that enthusiasm. And certainly Republicans have some ground to make up. One other little data point that I found interesting is that Graham Plattner, who of course won the U.S. Senate primary in convincing fashion, he had 135,000 votes on his own. And that's more than all of the Republicans voting for the gubernatorial candidates. So I found that those numbers were pretty interesting.
Susan, when you hear what Steve is saying about people and how many people took a Democratic ballot, of course, we can't presume that all of them were Democrats because we have a semi-open primary. When you hear these numbers, do you think that means that people who are unenrolled are going to vote Democrat in the fall, or can we not really read that into this?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily read that into this. As you said, we don't really know how many of those unenrolled folks did show up and pull a party primary ballot, particularly in this case, the Democratic ballot. Certainly, from the folks that I've talked to and the polling we've seen, in general, the Democrats are very upset with the direction of the country in general, with the Trump administration in particular. And they're looking for change, and they're very motivated to show up and vote. The Plattner campaign has been extremely organized and coordinated, and getting and driving people to the polls to make sure that all of their votes are there and counted. And as Steve said, you know, the question is, where do these folks land in November? How motivated are they continuing to be at that point? And I think a lot of that will have to do with the economy.
Okay. So, Kevin, let me ask you this. We know that Graham Plattner has won the Democratic U.S. Senate primary, but the other big primaries, both Democrat and Republican for governor, and then also the second congressional district Democratic primary, all of these are going to go to ranked choice runoff. And two of those three appear to be very, very close. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, we kind of were saying headed into this that it was very unclear to all of us who was in the lead. I mean, it seems like in the Republican primary for governor, Bobby Charles has consistently shown up as the leading candidate in the limited amounts of polls that we've seen. He's certainly had momentum. But, you know, when you look at the Democratic primary for governor and the Democratic primary in CD2, those are just neck and neck races. I mean, at this point, you know, like in the second congressional district, State Senator Joe Baldacci is winning. He has about 31% with not all quite the votes counted. But then Matt Dunlap and Jordan Wood are right behind at around 29%. And it's what's really fascinating is that there's only about in that race, there's only about 1,200 to 1,500 votes separating first and third place. And if you look at the Democratic primary for governor, it's the same situation. Former CDC director Nirav Shah is leading right now at 26-27%, followed by Hannah Pingree, Troy Jackson, and Shanna Bellows. But again, there's only about 10,000 votes separating first and fourth. And we're headed into a ranked choice election or ranked choice runoff. So pretty much anything can happen, it feels like.
Well, I'm going to put it on you, Kevin. Walk us through what happens now. How does the ranked choice runoff work? How long is it going to take? When will we know who won?
Yeah, so what happens now is all the towns across the state, they've obviously collected their ballots together, or they have scanned them onto kind of little thumb drives. And state police and others will go out and they'll collect all those ballots from every single voting location. They'll bring them back to Augusta, to a central location where they'll be kept secured. State police will guard it to make sure that there's no chance of tampering. And then they starts this long process of scanning any ballots that aren't already in the system and you know, loading the votes into the system. This takes days, many days to do. So we're not going to get to the ranked choice runoff until definitely not until next week. And don't think they've given a clear time frame. Maybe Sue or Steve knows, but we're not going to know the results for at least a week or more.
Yeah. And I'll turn to you, Steve. Will that all happen on one day, or is there one round of ranked choice running off? And then after those results come in, is it the next day or the day after that there's a second round? Explain that to us.
Yeah, I'm not quite clear on that, Jennifer, to be honest with you. My guess is that because it doesn't take that much time to run the tabulation, it's really just feeding the ballots into the machine. And so it's conceivable if they can get all the ballots collected all at once, they could maybe run all the tabulations on one day. But I don't know if they're going to do that or not. What I heard this morning with the Deputy Secretary of State and Erwin Gratz is that I think they're not even going to start the collection process at the earliest Friday. and possibly not as soon, not maybe not until early next week. So it could be, you know, at least a week and possibly longer before we have any results in this thing. So, and again, I don't know that we've ever had this many races go in a single election go to a ranked choice runoff. I think this, what we have here, three possibly. So I think that's something very new.
Okay. Susan, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the semi-open primary. My understanding is that the folks behind this idea thought that were frustrated with the fact that the old primary system had people who might be described as at on the extreme edge of both of their party ending up in the general election year after year, and that maybe having a semi-open primary would encourage more candidates that were you know, attractive to unenrolled voters or even attractive to people who might vote for somebody on a different political party. Does this appear to be how it's playing out?
Well, maybe, but I would say not on the Republican side. Bobby Charles has a clear lead at this point. He did not embrace ranked choice voting. In fact, he told his supporters to put him number one all the way across and not to rank anyone else. And so he is more MAGA aligned. He's more of a Trump supporter than anyone else in the field. He talks a lot about things that are very important to folks who are aligned with President Trump, like immigration, crime. Bobby Charles talks a lot about, you know, cleaning up Maine, paints a very dark picture of the way life is in Maine. So I would say among, you know, the seven competitors in the Republican field, he would be the more MAGA aligned and, if you will, extreme candidate. On the Democratic side, you know, it's such a free-for-all at this point that it's hard to say. Certainly, we've talked before about the alliances that were created among Democrats, particularly among the three who had served in elected office before, and encouraging voters, if you don't rank me first, you know, make sure you rank the other two. So there was a lot more use of the ranked choice voting system there. Dr. Shaw, who's currently in the lead, I would say would be one of the more moderate candidates among the five who are competing. So perhaps maybe in the Democratic primary that may result in a more moderate candidate coming out. But we just really have to wait and see.
All right. And let's talk about early voting. Kevin, wondering if you think early voting helped Graham Plattner have such a decisive win in that many people voted before the latest round of accusations against him came out.
Yeah, I think in all likelihood, it helps him in some ways. It's unclear how much. It seems like being out there and kind of talking to Democratic voters, a lot of Democrats were saying, you know, yes, I understand his challenges and his, you know, his past troubles, but those are in his past, and I'm still voting for him. So we were still hearing that during the past week, 2 weeks, when some of these bigger controversies popped up. That said, yeah, a significant number of people did cast their ballots probably before. I haven't looked at the numbers for when the starting at the cutoff day, but did cast their ballots before these more recent scandals involving the sexting and these toxic relationships that he's alleged to have had. Whether that was a big difference. I mean, he still won with 72%. That's a pretty good number. And a lot of people were watching to see where he was going to come in and how much of an impact it had.
Steve, you've had a busy morning. One of the things you've been doing is filing stories for the national news, because these races, especially the Senate race, is so interesting on a national scale. Remind us why. It's not just because the numbers in the Senate and the fact that Democrats are hoping to retake the Senate, is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a big reason why, you know, because I think the conventional wisdom, and I think it's right, is that if the Democrats are going to retake the U.S. Senate, they need to win Maine. They have to knock off Republican Senator Susan Collins. That's just the math, I think, and, you know, looking at what they're chances for pickups are across the country. Maine is in their crosshairs. Obviously, that's one big reason. But the other big reason, I think, is this factional fight within the Democratic Party, which is taking place all over the country. and it's been going on for a little while, but it's really become more acute since President Donald Trump won re-election or his second term in 2024. There's just a lot of anger and, you know, just sort of distress among Democratic voters across the country about that loss and what it says about the direction of the party. And there are two factions, or maybe even three, that are duking it out for control of, you know, what the future of the party looks like. And Graham Platner represents one faction, which is more aligned with Bernie Sanders, who's actually an independent. And Bernie Sanders endorsed Graham Platner, you know, early in his campaign and arguably helped him gain a good head of steam last year before Governor Janet Mills even got into the race. And then you have, you know, this more sort of like moderate or establishment wing of the party that's sort of been in control for a little while and wants to keep that. And they think that their approach is the best way for the party to appeal to independent voters. So, you know, this battle in Maine is a proxy fight of that larger dispute among Democrats. So that's one big reason. And of course, you know, you just have this candidate, Graham Platner, who's very interesting, you know, and that's setting aside the controversies and unflattering things that have come out about him in the last several months, and even especially so in the week preceding the primary. You know, he's a charismatic figure. He's being compared to like Democrats' version of Trump in some ways, although, I mean, I don't know. I think that's just because of the fact that these controversies haven't been able to knock him out of the race. And we certainly saw, you know, we know that's been the case for President Trump. He, you know, he's had all kinds of controversies and still he's been able to capture the support of the Republican electorate, and he's their standard bearer. So I think it's a bunch of different things, but they're all very, you know, I mean, I went to Blue Hill where the watch party was last night for Graham Platner, and the national media was crazy. I mean, I've never seen, except for Trump rallies, that kind of a national media presence in the state of Maine, especially in a primary. It was wild.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. What are you thinking about today, the day after Maine's primary? An unusual primary in that this is the first time the governor's race has been part of a semi-open primary. We've got the ranked choice voting. We've got more and more early voting. What are you thinking? Did you vote early? Are you an unenrolled voter who took a ballot, a Democratic or Republican ballot yesterday? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about yesterday primary vote results. Joining me, Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House correspondent, Susan Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer with Spectrum News, and Steve Missler, who is chief political correspondent with Maine Public. Before we go to the calls, I want to bring up one more thing, and Kevin, I'll turn to you. In both the races, the primary races for the congressional districts, District 1 and 2, there was a person who was younger than 30 running, if I have this right, Josh Petrowitz for the Republicans in CD1 and Paige Loud for Democrats in CD2. Neither one did very well, but both, I think, represented themselves well in the debates. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on where these two are going and whether we'll hear from them again.
Yeah, certainly. Paige Loud, I've heard a lot of Democrats say that they were impressed with her. You know, she's a total political newcomer. And she during her convention speech, people were kind of really impressed with that. She did well in the debates. So I would fully expect that she's going to continue to be around. I haven't talked to her about kind of what her plans are after this, but she seems very motivated. People seem to say that she just came across as very authentic and just, you know, almost kind of a non-politician. And Josh Petrowitz in the first district Republican race, again, very young. He did well in the debates. Not sure what his plans are. He has run for office before, so it seems like he's probably going to try to run again. He did try to make the age issue a central part of his campaign. because Ron Russell, who won the nomination, is much older. I think there's like a 40 some year difference between the two of them. But that obviously didn't quite resonate with that argument didn't resonate with voters this time around.
All right. Before we move on to listener calls and questions, Susan or Steve, either of you have thoughts about Paige Loud and Josh Petrowitz?
I will say that I thought Paige Loud's convention speech was quite powerful. And when she was in the debates, she was really relaxed. And, you know, I remember her making a comment to Senator Baldacci, you know, welcome back from Washington. I'm glad you could make the debate. So she seems pretty fearless. You know, she is young. And I think, you know, Kevin's right. It'll be really fascinating to see where she lands in the future.
Yeah, and I would just add to that. I mean, I thought Paige Loud, I was kind of surprised because one of the things about her campaign is that she was late getting on the ballot, or she turned in her signatures, I think, the day they were due, which, you know, I think speaks to the fact that if maybe she had a little bit of campaign infrastructure and maybe was able to get out of the gate a little bit sooner, she may have done a lot better than she ended up doing. Although, and yet she ended up doing quite well in spite of all that. So I think, you know, I agree with Kevin and Susan that, I'm sure that there's going to be people who are looking at her, and I'm not quite sure, you know, what that means, if she'll run for legislature or something like that, or maybe take another shot at a congressional seat in 2 years. I mean, that's certainly a possibility, especially given, you know, we don't know how the midterm election is going to shake out, because these Democrats, whoever wins, is going to have to face former Governor Paul LePage, who did not have a primary opponent, so he secured the nomination yesterday, too.
All right, so we'll go to Frederick calling from Bath. Hi, Frederick, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to address my comment to Steve and to public broadcasting in general. What I see is a lifelong supporter of Bernie Sanders since the 1980s. He's had a critique of our economy, that the system is working absolutely as it should. It funnels money to the wealthy. There's a struggle amongst most of the people to make ends meet. This is not a completely new analysis. Steve, now what Graham is addressing is this classic struggle that has just torn America apart, from the closing of hospitals from coast to coast to a United States Senate and House which is completely beholden to a system that is not working. And in fact, it doesn't work for the wealthiest, because our planet is in dire consequences.
Frederick, and Steve, thank you. I want Steve, you thoughts? Public... Steve.
Oh, sorry. I thought he had something else to say. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I think I mentioned earlier that Bernie Sanders endorsed Graham Platner. And honestly, if you look at their platforms, there's not a lot of daylight between the two of them. So I think, this sort of economic populism, this critique of moneyed interests and their stranglehold on the political system in this country, that is a very powerful message. And I think, you know, even last night, you know, when Platner was giving his victory speech, he really did. He hammered those themes home repeatedly. And I expect him to continue to do that, because I think that that particular message has cross-party appeal. I think that's true. I mean, I think, you know, go back to the 2016 Democratic primaries and just in other states too. Bernie Sanders did really, really well here. And I think that, you know, there was a reason why Donald Trump, after he secured the nomination and Bernie Sanders lost the Democratic nomination to Hillary Clinton, that Donald Trump was courting Bernie Sanders' supporters openly, saying, come home to me because I stand for very similar things. And I think Platner has an opportunity to try that, try the Bernie Sanders route, if he has the room and the space to talk about those things. As long as the, you know, other revelations and unflattering news about him doesn't crowd out that message. I think, you know, that's what he wants to talk about. That's what he has been talking about. And I do think it's an appealing message, not just to Democrats, but certainly independents. One thing I want to add about independents, because you mentioned the early vote, Jen, earlier. early absentee voting numbers that I last pulled on Monday, 75% of the independents who took out a ballot and with the intention of voting in a party primary voted in the Democratic primary. Now, I don't know why they did that, why that percentage was so high, but maybe it has something to do with Grand Platinum. I don't know. But I think that is interesting, especially if we see the independent vote shake out in the broader day of voting from yesterday.
Somebody could interpret that as there was a lot of enthusiasm for Grand Platner. Someone else could say these are people who lean Republican who want to make sure Susan Collins has the best chance of winning, right? I mean, there could be two reads on that.
But if you lean Republican, you might want to vote in the Republican primary. I don't know, but it's certainly possible.
Well, there's no Republican primary for the Senate. So anyway, like you said, you don't know why, but 75% of the unenrolled voters who voted early, those were people who requested a Democratic ballot, correct?
Right.
Right. Frederick, thank you so much for calling in. An email here from Beverly. I'm writing to express my deep concern regarding a situation my husband and I encountered at our town hall in Hancock County yesterday. After moving to a new county in 2020, we registered as green independent voters. When we went to cast our ballots, election workers informed us that because there were no green independent candidates running, we were ineligible to vote. We were told we could have only participated if we were registered as unenrolled. We take our civic duties seriously and had carefully researched the candidates and prepared our choices in advance. Being turned away at the polls was incredibly distressing. Could you please clarify how this rule is applied and what steps we need to take to ensure our right to vote is protected in future elections? We would like to understand how such a restriction can be placed on registered voters. Susan.
Yeah, so I double-checked with the Secretary of State's office this morning, and the explanation is that these June elections are party primaries. So if you remember back, it wasn't so long ago in Maine where we had a caucus system where on a Saturday morning, you'd go to the high school gym. If you were a Democrat, you'd go on a certain day. If you were a Republican, you'd go on a certain day. And people would literally stand in different parts of the gym behind one candidate or another. And the party would send in all the results, and then they would come up with their nominees for November. Well, in the last few years, this has been a much more formalized process where these June elections now are very similar to the general election in November, but they're different in that they still are party functions. So for the folks who are green independents, when they showed up, there are no green independents running, say, for governor. So there was no ballot to give them for them to choose who they wanted their nominee to be in November. If they had wanted to drop their party affiliation, they would have needed to do that a certain number of days before. And I'm sorry, I don't know whether it's 15 or 30 days. They could have dropped their affiliation, gone in as unaffiliated, and then they could have chosen a Republican or Democratic ballot. Certainly now moving forward for them and for others in November, if you're a registered voter, it doesn't matter what party you're in, you're going to go in and get your ballots and you can vote for whoever you want. But hopefully that helps create some understanding for folks out there who may be frustrated with the system, but really, yesterday's vote was for the parties to choose their candidates for November.
Kevin.
Yeah, and I think just what was throwing some people off is the independent and green independent party. I think folks would think, well, I'm an independent, I can go in and vote. And it's a registered, as Sue mentioned, it's a registered party. So they, and the green independents have not really helped. Fielded primary candidates in the past couple. Well, I think they did. Well, it's been a little while. They're not as active as they used to be. So I think that's what threw people off.
An email here from Danny. I'm an unenrolled voter in the 2nd Congressional District. I appreciate that I had the choice of voting in either the Democratic or Republican primary. In this election, I voted in the Democratic primary. I liked ranked choice voting because it gave me the opportunity to show my support for the candidate I believe in most strongly, even though she was unlikely to win. I ranked Paige Loud first. And I think it's great that the CD2 race will now likely be decided by the second choice votes of Loud's voters. So Danny, thank you for that email. And Kevin, I'll turn it back to you. That's a pretty sophisticated analysis And it shows how Danny thought about his vote.
Yeah, and you do see voters, that's as we're getting more comfortable and more used to ranked choice voting, you're definitely seeing voters starting to make those strategic decisions. And he's absolutely right. So because of the way the ranked choice voting process works, they eliminate from the bottom up. So the first voters who are going to have their second, third preferences, or the second preferences considered, will be Paige Loud, because she will be eliminated first. So that's correct. He and other Paige Loud voters will get their say. It's unclear if that's going to tip anyone, probably won't tip anyone over the 50% threshold, because these margins are so narrow, and Joe Baldacci still only has 31%. But we're seeing more and more of that strategic voting happening with ranked choice voting as people, you know, learn how to use the process.
An email here from Kim. How will ranked choice voting be used in the midterm elections? Is it true that not all races will be run this way? And if so, why not? Steve, we're going to be answering these questions for a long time, I have a feeling, but they're really important. So please let us know what to expect in November.
So ranked choice voting will not be used in the gubernatorial or legislative elections, or, you know, on that part of the ballot. It will be used in congressional elections if there are three or more candidates. So I don't think there's any independents running for the U.S. Senate that have qualified for the ballot. So that won't be a race that will be affected. The first congressional district, I don't think there's any. And the second congressional district, I'm unaware of a third candidate, although I may be mistaken about that. Kevin's nodding his head.
Yeah, I think there are some independents that are, but they haven't qualified for the ballot yet. So,
okay. So anyway, if there are three or more candidates, ranked choice voting will be used in the congressional contests, but not the gubernatorial contests or legislative contests. And the reason for that is that the main Supreme Judicial Court has basically said twice now that ranked choice voting is in violation of the Maine Constitution as it relates to gubernatorial and legislative contests. There's just clear language in there that winners in those races in general elections have to be decided by a plurality, which is basically first past the post versus a majority, which is a requirement in ranked choice voting.
And Susan, we're going to have three well-known strong candidates for the governor's race in November. Whoever wins the Democratic primary, whoever wins the Republican primary, and the former Senate president, Rick Bennett, as an independent. And that will not be decided by ranked choice voting.
That's true. And Senator Bennett's already out on the campaign trail this week. He's not wasting any time waiting to see who his opponents are going to be. And certainly, you know, I think it's probably fair to say that he's hoping that, you know, the more extreme candidates on both sides are the ones who are nominated, because even though he is a former Republican and former Republican Party chairman, I think he's looking to position himself as kind of the guy in the middle, you know, the moderate, but someone who can appeal to folks in both parties.
And it is, I'm thinking, and tell me, Susan, if this is right, because there's a good chance of three strong candidates, this could be a race in which somebody gets 33-34% of the vote and wins.
Yeah, for sure. And that wouldn't be surprising. I mean, we saw that when Governor LePage won the first time around in 2010. I think he got like 38% of the vote. And just to note, I don't know that this will happen, but there are two other independents who are challenging the Secretary of State's decision that they didn't get enough signatures. So it's theoretically possible that there could be another candidate or two on the ballot in November. But those are cases that will go to Superior Court for consideration, and we'll see if either of those folks are able to actually qualify for the ballot.
Well, this is Maine Calling, and we're talking about primary election results. You can join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566 or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing yesterday's primary election. My guests, Maine Public political reporters Kevin Miller and Steve Missler, and Susan Cover with Spectrum News. Share your comments and questions. Send us a brief email talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Falmouth and Mark. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I'm a big Graham Plattner supporter, primarily because he's the only candidate who is forthrightly talking about the issues that really affect people and they care about. His slogan of tax the rich really points to an obvious failing of our current tax code system, where the self-employed start out at a 25% tax rate when you include FICA taxes, whereas the investment class never pays more than 20% on their capital gains. That the fact that in 1934 to 1985, the top marginal income tax rate was at least 70%. So people understand this, and the more people who become aware of these facts begin to realize that our current tax code is really stacked against the working class. So
Mark,
Graham is the only one talking
so
about
So thank
this.
You for your call. And Susan, we have a few emails and calls where people are saying in one way or another, Graham Plattner is appealing to me because of his stand on the issues, and I wish... some people are saying, I wish the media, one of my least favorite terms, would stop reporting on his personal failings.
Well, this is interesting because we've talked about how when Plattner first got into the race, the national media all ran up to Maine and wrote very glowing stories about him. He was this Keoxic figure from the coast, you know, the rugged oyster man. Who's going to take on, you know, really a giant of Maine politics, Susan Collins, you know, our long-term five-term senator. So, you know, he got a lot of very positive national press coverage when he launched. And then, of course, you know, a couple of months later, we saw the Reddit posts and other things. And most recently, you know, the Wall Street Journal stories and the New York Times. So in my mind, the media is doing its job, maybe helping to vet candidates a little bit more than perhaps Plattner was vetted by the team who recruited him to run in the first place. And certainly folks, you know, have a lot of opportunities to hear from him directly. I think he said today he's done more than 80 town halls. So he's had ample opportunity to get his message out. And I think all of us, and particularly in the Maine media, have, you know, covered all the issues that he's spoken about, you know, and also balance that out with helping people understand who this person is and what his qualifications are, and maybe what are some of the things that he needs to explain to folks to earn their vote in November.
And to Mark's other point, Kevin, because his issue, it sounds like, is taxes and the tax code. This sort of the old political wisdom is that voters don't really vote on issues in the end as much as a gut feeling about candidates. Is that changing? I mean, is Mark somebody who represents the new voter where there is an issue that is the issue they are voting about?
I don't know. I mean, this election, we are definitely seeing the this election and last election, I mean, look how much the economy played into to the way people voted. I think in this time around, we talked about it earlier, there's just this very strong, you know, anti-establishment feel that Graham Plattner has been able to tap into. And that's one big thing that probably it's not necessarily an issue per se, but people are frustrated with the Democratic Party. They're frustrated, and Graham is really speaking to that. He's very forceful in his criticism of the Democratic Party. So I think that's part of what's going on here. But I also think that, you know, let's be honest, he's a very gifted speaker. I mean, and the way he's addressed these controversies, I think when I talk to voters, they give him a lot of credit because he's sometimes criticized for not acknowledging them before they came out. But, you know, when these controversies do come out, he has come out and he's addressed them. He's not shied away from responding to the criticism. And there's a voters seem to think that's a genuine, you know, response from him. And I think he gets a lot of credit for that. So I think it's as much personality and approach as it is issues. But he's definitely speaking to the issues that people are concerned about, you know, right now as far as, you know, the economy and rising costs and having difficulty finding jobs and making a living here in Maine.
Steve.
Yeah, I think just to build off what Kevin says, I think he really nailed it, is, you know, one thing that Plattner has been able to do too, is he's been able to turn these unflattering stories into and reframe them as redemption stories. And by virtue of just talking about them, excuse me, openly. And I think that's a very powerful thing. I mean, if you talk to voters, as Kevin did recently, that was a theme. There was a redemption theme going on with these folks, and they see in Plattner, you know, a human being who's had his share of, you know, to his, by his own admission, had a rocky past after he got a combat tours that Iraq and Afghanistan, and really was in the wilderness by his own admission. You know what I mean? Not really sure what he was going to do with his life, and spent some time trying to figure it out. And like even last night during his victory speech, he tried to turn this due to sort of rhetorical turn where he talked about his struggles openly again, but also just sort of said, like, look, this is not a story about me. It's a story about us. And, you know, sort of the struggles of working class Mainers and that sort of thing. I think that's a very powerful message. And I think, you know, just getting back to this other thing about policy versus personality, I think with this guy, it's both. You know what I mean? Like he's talking about policies that I think are pretty popular. And also he's a charismatic personality. So he's kind of, I think that's why he's done as well as he has, is that he's, you know, as Kevin pointed out, a very gifted speaker, charismatic and all that. And he's got a platform where, you know, look, he's not the first person to run on a Bernie Sanders platform. You know what I mean? But there are other candidates, including in the governor's race, and Democratic candidate Troy Jackson is a Bernie Sanders Democrat. And so, you know, but there's a difference in between him and Plattner, I think, just in the way they, you know, approach and how they communicate and that sort of thing. And I think Plattner shows that if you have a lot of charisma and personality, you can really hammer home the points of that policy platform that I think is popular with a lot of voters.
Susan, I would love to see some research on how all of this information that's coming out about Graham Plattner is landing with women versus men, especially women of a certain age. Only anecdotally, I'm noticing on social media feeds among people I know that women, and I would say especially women of a certain age, are less likely to be forgiving than men generally. And I'm wondering how that plays out and I'm sure we'll find out an election in which it is a man versus a woman. With very different political views in November.
Yeah, for sure. And I've spoken also with some of those women of a certain age. I think I'm probably in that category, you know, about their concerns with Plattner and, you know, heading into Tuesday's election, what they were going to do, what their options would be. But ultimately, most of them, at least, of course, these are Democratic women at this point, were saying, but, you know, I will support the party's nominee in November. When they contrast Plattner with Senator Collins, they have concerns about, you know, her confirming of Brett Kavanaugh and the effect on, you know, the reversal of Roe v. Wade and a lot of those issues. So, you know, now, as you say, you know, we're broadening out to the larger electorate and, you know, where are the other women going to land? The other women of a certain age who might be questioning Plattner now for the first time because they didn't have an opportunity or take an opportunity to vote for him or against him yesterday, but they'll have to make those decisions in November. So this is where it's all going to be really fascinating to see how that, you know, pans out. In previous polls, we had seen that Plattner was doing quite well with women, you know, whether that kind of has been backed off now by the sexting scandal and the most recent stories about his ex-girlfriends, we will find, as you said, in the data.
Thank you, Mark, for your call. We'll go up to South Portland and Cindy. Hi, Cindy, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that in the Democratic race for governor, the fact that it was so close and ranked choice kicked in is because we have so many highly qualified candidates here in Maine. And that's wonderful to see. And I hope those people stick around in politics. My question is a technical one for your panel. You brought it up earlier about in the ranked choice process, one of the candidates suggested that a voter votes to rank that candidate number one, number two, number three, number four across the board. And I, too, thought about doing that, but I was concerned that my ballot might be invalidated. And is that a is that an acceptable way to vote? Thank you.
Ah, good question. Does anyone know the answer if somebody puts the same candidate for one, two, three, four, and five? Steve, you're nodding. Yeah. Or Kevin, you are too. What have you? Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, it's totally acceptable to do that. But your vote is only counted once. So basically, you're voted that. So it's not going to invalidate your ballot at all. But you know, when it gets to the ranked choice, you know, process, you have given up. If your candidate did not win, you have given up your ability to rank others and to have those, you know, second, third preferences to be considered. So I hope that's an understandable way, Steve.
Yeah, I think the way I think about it is that it's the same thing as just ranking one candidate once and that's it, not ranking anybody else. It's literally the same effect. You know, and your ballot will not be spoiled because you happen to, you know, rank them one through five or whatever the case may be. It's the same thing as it counts the same as just ranking, just picking one rank, you know, ranking, say, Nirav Shah number one and nobody else. It's effectively the same result on your how your ballot is counted.
Thank you, Cindy. Yeah. An email here from Carol. I work with vets at TOGUS. I think Americans are going to see more political candidates who were combat veterans with all of the baggage or problems these experiences manifest. They are wounded healers in the sense that they are now ready to serve America in a needed, important way today. So, Carol, thank you for that insight. And Kevin, both political parties nationally are intentionally recruiting veterans to campaign, correct?
Yeah, they certainly are. Excuse me, they certainly are. And, you know, we have, I think that I'm sure that factored into the recruitment of Graham Blattner. You know, it seems like the Republicans in the past kind of were more focused on, you know, on the veterans or, you know, recruiting veterans. But I mean, look at who in our second district, Jared Golden, you know, a Marine Corps veteran as well. He was looked at as an attractive candidate for the second district because Maine has so many veterans. So I won't be surprised to see that both parties continue to focus on recruiting veterans.
All right. I'm going to go to Melinda calling from Brunswick. Melinda, we're tight on time. So if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Hi. People might call me a prude, but I can't stand having people who are in the White House and in Congress and other high-level places in our government using vulgar language. And on that basis alone, regardless of anything else, I would not vote for Blattner. I think it's an example of how they think, whether they respect the people they're talking to, whether they have self-respect. Vulgarity doesn't imply that you're fit for the kind of position he's trying to get. And he has no political background. He doesn't know how to negotiate. I think he might be a bully. And I've talked to a lot of people my age, of a certain age, and all the people I've talked to from the beginning have had reservations about Blattner, even though I am a fanatically Bernie Sanders person.
Melinda, thank you so much. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call, somebody who is feels the opposite about this. Tina, go ahead.
I'm just curious about why you're calling out people of a certain age, women of a certain age who might be offended, because my offense goes to Susan Collins, who let Brett Kavanaugh get right through to the Supreme Court and allowed him to then turn over Roe v. Wade with the other conservative court members. And that has a huge impact on me and all women of all ages and the men who love them. So I'm really curious.
I was only talking about what I have noticed, anecdotally on my Facebook feed, on my conversations with people I know. I was not saying that they're right or wrong. I was saying what I had noticed.
But I'm just, I'm just curious what those ages would be, because I feel like it is all women can fall into that category of having to respond as women and as people.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. And I appreciate you calling. And thank you to our guest today, Susan Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer for Spectrum News. Kevin Miller is Maine Public State House correspondent, and Steve Missler is Maine Public's chief political correspondent. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the life and legacy of former Maine Governor Ken Curtis, who was elected at age 35. There's a new biography about him. The author believes he was the state's most significant governor. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.